We have one matter for oral argument right now, Ochoa versus State, on remand from the Court of Criminal Appeals. Would the clerk go ahead and call the case, please?
The court will now call numbers 02-21-174-176-CR, Emmanuel Ochoa versus the State of Texas. May it please the court, Mr. Jeremy Olu will argue for the appellant, and Ms. Emily Johnson Liu will argue for the state.
All righty, I should have introduced the panel before I had the clerk do that. I'm a little rusty, haven't done this for several months. My name is Wade Birdwell. I'm justice on the court. To my left is Justice Mike Wallach. To my right, who has the shock collar for me, this is Justice Dana Womack, and we're the panel for today, and we will hear at this point in time from counsel for the defendant.
Ready to proceed, Your Honor?
Please.
May it please the court, counsel. My name is Jeremy Oney, and I represent Emmanuel Ochoa. The sole issue before the court is whether Emmanuel Ochoa was harmed by the improper admission of his statement, which was taken in violation of his due process rights. Because the error in admitting his statement was of a constitutional nature, this court should reverse the conviction unless it determines beyond a reasonable doubt that the error did not contribute to Ochoa's conviction or punishment. Ochoa was harmed by the admission of his statement because it's an error that permeated the entire trial. The effects of the statement began with the opening statements of the state. They started by explaining the disappearance of MG and her discovery, and spent significant time discussing the trauma that she had suffered as a result of this offense. And the state in the opening statement told the jury that they were going to know what happened to MG because Ochoa had told the ranger what had occurred. The prosecutor explained in graphic detail that Ochoa had raped her. He had put his penis in her vagina and had sex with her, and he told the jury that Ochoa had admitted to hitting her in the back of the head and putting her to sleep. Likely intentionally, this was charged language used by the prosecutor in his opening statement to elicit an emotional response from the jury right off of the bat and right out of the gate on the trial. Consequently, Ochoa had to begin his case and his opening statement by telling the jury, or asking the jury, to basically say, we realize that you just heard about the confession that the state just told you about, but we need you to disregard that confession. He was starting the case at trial with his back against the wall or behind in the race because he had to deal with and ask the jury to ignore this confession. And that's a hard thing to ask a jury to do, especially when they've heard this charged language.
So if the state hadn't had that confession to start off their oral argument to start with, what do you think their strongest statement would have been?
Well, I believe that, talking about the strongest statement or the strongest evidence they would have had aside from?
That's it.
Okay. I believe that the strongest evidence would have been the DNA evidence. If you want me to go ahead and discuss that, or
sure.
Okay, the DNA evidence in this case, and it was heavily relied on at trial, and it was relied on primarily at this level by the state. And while it does have some probative value, its probative value is limited. So let's discuss what the DNA evidence showed. It showed that there was male DNA on MG, but that DNA that was found on her was unable to be identified. They couldn't say that the DNA located on MG was Ochoa or anyone else.
Well, actually, there was sperm which was taken from outside her labia majora, which he was excluded from, correct?
Correct. Okay. Correct.
So that's not just something that he could not be excluded from, he was excluded from.
That's correct.
Go ahead.
And the other DNA evidence that was a big factor at trial was the DNA evidence that was located on his underwear that was could not be excluded to be MG's DNA.
Let me ask you about that, counsel.
Yes, sir.
One of the things that came out during the testimony is that, first, the DNA you're talking about was on the inside of his underwear, correct?
Well,
It was on the inside of the fly.
Well, even that is a little bit. So there's two different places in the testimony where the lab person talked about that. When they were originally talking about the samples that were taken, the prosecutor referred to the inside, and the DNA analyst said, well, we don't distinguish inside, outside. We make a cutting, and the DNA could come from the inside or the outside.
Okay, so but it was a cutting from the fly.
It was a cutting from the fly.
From the underwear.
Yes.
Okay. What I really want to ask about is, there was, according to my understanding of the record, is that there was seminal fluid, but it was mixed with blood. Is that correct?
There was seminal fluid located, and there was something that tested presumptively positive for blood. I can't say that they used the word mix right off the top of my head, but there was both present. Yes.
But focusing on the blood.
Yes.
Okay. Was there any evidence that there was any source of blood on your client himself, or that he had been in any contact with anybody who was bleeding at any point in time immediately before this event that would have been a source for the blood that was found on his underwear?
I don't believe that there was anything else on the record indicating that he would have come in contact with blood that I'm aware of, no sir.
With regard to the opinion of the expert with regard to the DNA, they could not rule out the victim here as the source of that blood, correct?
And now they couldn't rule her out as the, yes, correct. That's correct.
Okay. So they couldn't rule her out. We do know based upon the medical that, in fact, she was, in fact, bleeding because her hymen had been broken. She had tears in her labia based upon the sex that had occurred. So we know she's bleeding. We know there's an open source of blood, and then they have blood on his underwear that is not, she can't be excluded from, okay? In the context of semen also being on his underwear, okay? So that, to me, seems to be like the best evidence that would link him to her in that regard.
And
so my question is why is that not sufficient for the conviction here in terms of what we're being asked with regard to the impact of the confession coming in improperly?
Well, to break your question down a little bit, I think that if we had this set of facts without the confession, let's say that the judge had excluded the confession and we had this evidence, this court may very well find that was legally sufficient evidence to support the conviction. But as the court is aware, that's not the test here for purposes of...
We probably would even do that without DNA evidence back in the day. Blood.
Correct.
Opportunity.
And so, but the question before this court is not whether the evidence taking out the improperly admitted evidence is still sufficient to support the conviction, because like I said, this court likely would find that. It's did it have any effect on the conviction or the punishment. Now, the argument that Ochoa made at trial was there was other ways in which DNA could have gotten on his clothing because I mean, there was evidence that other pieces of his clothing had many people who lived in this home, 13 to 18 people at any given time living in this home, and other DNA was located. And so
was there any indication that this was touch DNA as distinct from serum or blood serum or
I believe or there was DNA? And
Because I understand the argument.
Yes.
Look, we all live in the same.
Yes.
We've got all kinds of people here, et cetera.
Mm-hmm.
We all sit on the same couch.
Yes.
You know, I sit in the couch in my underwear watching TV.
Correct.
Da, da, da,
yeah.
That type
and,
of thing.
And even the semen, without getting too graphic, we're talking about a 14-year-old boy, and you've mentioned the semen being located on his underwear. I don't even think that would be that unusual.
Necessarily. That's why I'm focusing on the blood aspect of it.
Correct. And the jury may very well not have necessarily believed that argument, or we don't know what the jury believed. But the point would be that there was some decision-making process that would have had to have occurred when posited with this alternative theory of how the DNA got there. The jury still would have had to make a decision on how it got on his underwear or how it got there. And so because they were positive of an alternative theory, their deliberations necessarily would have required them to utilize the confession to assist in resolving any conflict.
Okay, let me ask you this, and I may have interrupted you, but let me ask you this, because this is kind of where I think the rubber meets the road on this one, which is, are you arguing that because his confession matched up with the evidence as well as it did, that there's no way that the jury could have in fact ignored it? And if that's really what's going on here, that his confession, in other words, if he'd made some wild confession that I did it, but he didn't, you know, the DNA didn't match up, or he was someplace else and somebody else saw him somewhere, but there's no, the confession doesn't in fact match up with all of the other physical evidence. Is it the mere fact that it's matching up with the physical evidence that actually means that we've got to reverse this and send it back for a new trial?
Well, I think that's part of it. I don't know that what he said was necessarily, I mean, specific enough to be able to tell, because obviously she was sexually assaulted.
Right.
He admitted that he said that in that statement that he had sexually assaulted her. And so, yes, there were a lot of things that did match up, but I think to your...
You see what I'm saying?
Yes,
Is he's, you know, the jury, if... The jury is going to be matching up what he says to see if it matches up with the physical evidence. Obviously, the state is going to be highlighting where the physical evidence matches up with his confession.
Correct.
Okay, which is what they did.
Yes.
And so... But in the error analysis that we're supposed to be doing, we're supposed to be looking at the other evidence that's not confession-oriented, but it seems like you're arguing almost that the confession, by being so much of a matchup, actually infects the physical evidence to the point where we've got to go try the thing again.
Yes, and I would agree with that statement. I believe that a lot of, because he admitted in his statement or his confession to the strangling, and there was evidence of that. He admitted to hitting her in the head, and there was evidence of that.
Cleaning fluid.
Correct. And those were a little bit more specific than just the general sexual assault.
Exactly.
I think those things are a little bit more specific. But I would agree, and the state did in their closing argument, matched up. And one of the specific things was the admission that he had taken her to the house next door, and there was evidence from the house next door that tied MG to having been in that house, aside from just being found underneath the house, but being inside that house.
Well, of course, it's a place where he had actually lived and been evicted from.
Correct. So yes,
it was an area. It was a house that he had actually lived in,
and it was a house that was right next door to the house where they were all living. So it was fairly close in proximity.
So where are there any cases at all that talk about how we're to deal with this matchup issue in terms of, you know, if the physical evidence is so compelling that, but his story just happens to match up with everything about it, that we just don't, it doesn't matter how compelling the physical evidence is because it matches? Or is there any discussion about how we make that distinction?
Well, to answer your question, honestly, I don't know specifically if there's a case to that specific point. I do know that there are questions that the jury would have had to answer, even with it matching up, Specifically, there was the defense tried to present that there were other suspects that were ignored based on their behavior that would have been probably suspects absent the confession, and Ochoa at trial tried to focus the jury on those. Of course, the state came back with those witnesses every time and said, well, we've got the confession over here. So the state was able to, even given your point, the state was able to discredit or to undermine these alternate suspect theories that Ochoa tried to present at trial. So there were questions that Ochoa attempted to present to the jury to create doubt that would have obviously been answered by his confession. I mean, law enforcement testified that Jaquez would have been a suspect but for the confession. Dad's behavior was unusual, and so even if it matches up, I think there are questions that Ochoa attempted to present to the jury that necessarily would have had to have been answered.
Back to the question of the blood from his underwear sample. There's testing on sperm and there's epithelial testing. I don't see any testing on the DNA of the blood.
And that's what I was trying to remember when Justice Birdwell was asking the question. So the epithelial, I can't get that word out, would it be the touch DNA that he was asking about? Because that would be...
You can go ahead and finish his question if okay. You have a follow-up.
Oh, yes, sir.
Just so that we understand, there may have been blood on the underwear, but there's no testing to determine whose blood it was, correct?
And I was going to double-check. I believe you're right. I was, like I said, I was, when he was asking the question, I was trying to remember which one was tested, but... I believe
maybe it would be skin.
Epithelial would be skin, yes, sir, yes, sir, and then obviously the semen, which would have been his. So my time is up on this part. So unless y'all have anything further right now.
All righty, thank you. Would you add a minute to the state's time, please? You know what the first question is going to be, don't you?
So my understanding, my name is Emily Johnson Leo. I'm arguing here at the request of the Cook County DA's office from the state prosecuting attorney's office. So my understanding is that the area that they test from the inner fly is the stain where there is human blood been found and semen. And they take that and they try to extract DNA and they find a mixture of two profiles. But I do not believe they are able to definitively say whether this is from epithelial or this is from blood. They are able to say from this area that has both blood and semen, there are two profiles, the defendant and the victim. So from that evidence is really quite extraordinary. It's the kind of smoking gun evidence that the Eighth Circuit talks about in terms of that proof beyond a reasonable doubt that we can have assurance even when there is a confession erroneously admitted, that the jury would have already believed proof. They would not have gone from a state of non-persuasion to persuasion by having that confession. They were already over the goal line when they had this DNA evidence. Because of the context that was in.
But before they ever got to the goal line, you had opening statement where the state's talking about the confession. So they know this, the confession's coming in, and they know that the guy sitting right there has confessed to doing this, and so every bit of the state's evidence was presented in the context of the state telling that this guy said he did it. So how are we to say that evidence viewed in that context, the confession didn't contribute to their evaluation and deliberation of the evidence?
I think there's two points. First, that you have to look at the context in which this occurs and the order of the evidence. And I'll remind the court that right before opening statements, the trial judge admonishes the jury, don't take out your notes right now. What you're going to hear from the attorneys is not evidence. And so they've been forecasted that there might be something to come. But they have been told and reminded that this is not going to be evidence. And then they hear 10 witnesses from the state. They hear medical testimony about how she was raped. They hear scientific evidence about the DNA. They hear evidence of the interviews that happened and the law enforcement and CPS that were investigating the case. All of that is what they hear in evidence before we ever get to the final witnesses about the confession. That's why the jury already would have been at the state of, for sure, this is a sexual assault. You have this very unusual DNA context evidence of having profiles from both victim and defendant in the place where you would think that if it doesn't come from this, the astronomical chances of it ending up there otherwise is very unusual.
Back to this question on the blood again. But I'm looking at the DNA testing, and it says a mixed DNA profile with a major male contributor and at least one minor contributor was obtained from the epithelial fraction. Are you telling me that you believe that the epithelial fraction includes the blood?
And this is from his underwear?
Yes.
My understanding is the epithelial fraction obviously would be skin-type cells. But I don't know whether or not they are able to completely, like how she was talking about being able to wash the profile out, to separate out the sperm cells from the epithelial. I'm not sure if they're able to say with strength that this necessarily comes from blood. But
So other than that, do you have any other indication from the DNA test results that there was actually blood in the material that was tested for DNA results?
Because it was taken from, so there's a stain on the underwear, and the stain has been tested, and they found that it contains both presumptive human blood and semen, and from that same area of the stain is where they take the cutting, and that's where they develop the DNA profile, and they have two profiles. They have his and hers. So that is...
There's a test before the DNA analysis, which establishes, and I know we've had at least one case where we've talked about this, the presumptiveness is an early identification of blood and or semen, okay? And then they do the DNA analysis based upon the extraction.
Right.
Okay. So we've got testimony in the record that there is a blood semen presumption.
Yes.
Based upon the initial initial testing, but the initial testing is a different test than the DNA analysis.
Yes.
Okay. But the fact that there's a presumption doesn't necessarily mean that there's actually any blood or semen. In other words, they don't necessarily mean you're going to be able to extract sperm from that test in terms of the... I'm sorry, I'm just vaguely remembering making this point in another opinion many, many months ago.
Yes. My memory of it is that they actually did the microscope test on this one and they saw sperm. So
and they tested sperm.
And they were trying to separate out the epithelial from the sperm.
Right. But the question is, does epithelial, that phrase to me means skin, it doesn't mean blood. And so can you point to me in the record where the forensic specialist who testified that the epithelial test, as opposed to the sperm test, actually tests for DNA as opposed to skin cells?
My understanding is that the DNA is...
Not my question. My question is, can you point to me in the record where the forensic specialist, you're not specialist, I'm not a specialist.
Right.
I'm asking for what's in the record as to what the forensic specialist testified to, if she testified to anything about that topic.
I do not think the specialist expert ever said, we know this is her blood. Never said that. I don't think.
Did she testify that there was blood on the sample?
Yes.
Okay. So she testified that the test, was it just a presumption that wasn't confirmed? Or did she testify categorically that there was, in fact, blood and semen on this particular material that ended up being the basis for the DNA analysis?
My understanding is that we have 100% for semen because they saw sperm. They did multiple levels of presumptive for the blood. They went from, is this blood of any sort of category, and then is this of the human variety?
So why would the report be referring to the epithelial fraction?
As opposed to the sperm fraction. Those are the only two fractions there are in the DNA. There's not a blood source. They know how to break open the skin cells, epithelial cells, to be able to get those out of the way so they can test for sperm. There's not a separate blood fraction. There's only the epithelial and the sperm fraction.
So you would not expect in this report there to be any discussion of DNA determined from the blood stain?
No.
Okay. So when there was testimony about they couldn't rule out the young girls from being the source of the DNA, okay, that was not saying it was her blood, or they couldn't rule out that it was her blood. You see what I'm saying? Because if the blood's not part of, if DNA is not extracted from the blood, only from the sperm or from the skin, okay, with regard to this analysis, then you can identify the blood being there, but in terms of the actual DNA analysis, which is what excludes somebody or doesn't, then that's coming from the semen, sperm, and the epithelial, and not from the blood. Is that what you're saying?
It is possible that her profile on his underwear comes from her epithelial cells. That is possible. It doesn't, but whether it's from her blood or whether it's from her epithelial cells, this is still really good evidence that she was sexually assaulted by the defendant. So I don't know that we need to get caught up.
If it's her blood, you could have secondary transmission of epithelial cells different from a blood transmission.
Sure.
Okay.
It is possible. It is extremely unlikely in this scenario where you do have blood and semen, that blood and semen stain. So what I'm saying is, like, even if it didn't turn out to be the DNA was actually from the blood, if it's from her secretions, if it's from her being, you know, she was awful, awful assault. There was a lot of violence. And so the fact that she would have skin cells sheared off when her hymen is ripped apart, that's
possible.
I'm
talking about just from being in the house and sitting on, you know, if I rub my hand across this table, I leave behind DNA, right?
Yes.
And if somebody comes along and tests it, they may find a secondary transmission of my DNA on this table.
All of these things are possible.
Right. But here, what we're called upon to decide, do you agree with this as the standard, that the judgment of the trial court must be reversed unless the record establishes beyond a reasonable doubt that the erroneous admission of the defendant's confession did not contribute to his conviction?
Yes, that is the standard.
It's kind of the reverse to convict him in the first place, beyond a reasonable doubt.
To unconvict him, we have
to be convinced beyond a reasonable doubt.
You have to be, but I think that you can reach that standard because of this, the unusual context in which this DNA happens.
Let's talk about something Justice Birdwell was talking about with counsel a minute ago. The effect that this confession has, okay, there is evidence. Now, to say that something can't be excluded is very different from saying it is excluded, correct?
Yes.
Okay, so on her labia majora,
yes,
there was sperm that was found And he was excluded, wasn't he?
No.
There was a sperm fraction, wasn't there?
Okay, so this was the confusion that the defense uses in closing argument. But it's a misunderstanding of the evidence. So when the experts, I would urge you to go back and read the expert's testimony here, because she's saying you have it's called an epithelial fraction and a sperm fraction. And what they are hoping to do is break apart all these skin cell fractions to be able to sweep those away so that they have remaining only the semen fraction. And then they run the DNA profile off of that. They got only a single DNA profile off of that. It was the victims in the sperm fraction.
Okay. What the test shows is that a partial STR profile was obtained from the sperm fraction on that sample, and the defendant is excluded.
You're saying is because it's female.
Yes. It's the victims.
And so because female and sperm are inherently irreconcilable when it comes to fluids and DNA, then basically he's excluded only because he's not female.
Correct.
But the sperm had to come from somewhere. And it's presumptively not her.
Okay, but it's not actually sperm. It's the sperm fraction of the sample that they have. They have a sample. It's like maybe two different kind of jelly beans in a jar, okay? And they try to take out the epithelial parts because they're trying to just focus in on what might be the sperm, whoever raped the victim. They take out one color of jelly beans, the epithelial, okay? But unfortunately, this test is not perfect. And so it remains some of those other colored jelly beans, which are actually still epithelial. It's still victim female DNA in the sperm fraction. That's why he's excluded.
So they couldn't identify the DNA from the sperm portion of the fraction, and the washing didn't get rid of all of hers.
Yes.
To be able to exclude her from it.
Yes.
And so effectively, the sperm on the labia, all it ended up doing was confirm there was sperm, but we couldn't identify anybody based upon it.
That's right. They can't develop a YSTR from, they saw that there was sperm, they saw in the microscope there was a sperm there on her outer labia, but they were not able to develop a YSTR, the male-only profile from that small sample.
So that's not saying that wasn't his sperm.
That's right.
It was simply saying we our test did not determine that DNA from that sperm. It didn't, because it was compromised by the epithelial from her.
Correct.
Okay.
So once you...
But there was an argument made by counsel at trial that sperm ended up, that was somebody else's sperm.
Correct.
Okay, and so that's what we're trying to figure out here.
Yes.
Okay. Okay.
And I think if you go back and look at that expert's testimony, the questions are not perfect from the prosecutor, but her answers, it goes through that.
Going back to the effect of the confession, there were other people who were persons of interest, so to speak, correct? Jeremiah Jocks.
There were other people there. The police thought were acting weird. Yes.
Their behavior caused them to be suspected.
Yes.
And one of them was suspected enough that they asked him to give a sample of his DNA.
Yes.
Another teenager, correct?
It's Jeremiah Jock, and I'm not sure he's the teenager. Yep. I think he's an adult.
Okay. And for some reason, the state never tested that, did they?
That's right.
Because they already had the confession, right?
We had the DNA evidence that said it was the defendant.
And then the father, the biological father, his behavior was suspect, at least in turn to the people who were investigating from the child welfare agency.
Yes.
Correct? And in fact, she referred to her father as bad dad, correct?
That's right.
But no further investigation was taken with respect to him, correct?
There was no, they did interview him and ruled him out.
They didn't ask for him to give any of his DNA, did they?
Not that I am aware of.
Okay.
Because the evidence of the sexual assault was so strong, the likelihood that in this house of 13 people, what are the odds that it's her DNA that happens to get on the inside of the underwear where there's also blood and semen? And as Justice Birdwell was talking about in my opponent's argument, we have lots of evidence that the blood could have come from her because she was still actively bleeding at the time of the same exam, like 12 hours later.
Could you clarify or address my question with regard to whether or not this came from the inside of the fly or the outside of the fly, or did it just come from fly material? In other words, inside would indicate obviously that it was in a position where his penis could rub against it, and anything on his penis could be deposited on the inside of his fly. If it's on the outside, then we're getting back into secondary sources type situation. So what did they actually test, and why was the word inside used, and do we put any legal emphasis on that with regard to the analysis of the evidence?
My understanding is that even the expert said it came from inside. It's there from the, like, if he's wearing his underwear in the way it ordinarily is meant to, that it comes from the part that would be next to his skin. But they do not distinguish in how they're doing the report between outside and inside. And they do take a cutting and then from that, so it's going to be three-dimensional. But I think that the fact that it comes from an area where there's blood and semen, that's the key to why we think this is related to this assault and not the chances that one out of 13 people happens to have the DNA evidence from her in this house. It is the fact that he was wearing it on the same day that she is found, and that's where we would expect to find DNA evidence. This was the kind of smoking gun type of evidence that already would have led any jury to convict for sexual assault. And because those other offenses, the aggravated kidnapping and the injury to a child, were so intertwined that this, whoever perpetrated the sexual assault is the one that took her from the bedroom. The fitted sheet from her bed found underneath the stairs of that trailer. All of the other physical...
Somebody had to have access to her bed and to her in the trailer to be able to remove her from there and then place her where they ultimately found her.
Yes.
So it'd have to be somebody who had access, and then the determination is that individual also ended up having blood that could be traced back to the rape in question.
That's right. There was.
But again, so the evidence is strong. We'd affirm on that. But his confession matches up with it, and it just basically tells the jury, hey, this is the guy, and the jury doesn't actually have to do any real deliberation because he's the guy.
Well, if they didn't have any doubt, which I think the DNA evidence would lead them to, they didn't have any doubt that he was the perpetrator of the sexual assault, then adding the confession doesn't do anything. It doesn't take that from the Westbrook standard that the Court of Criminal Appeals. Does it take from a state of non-persuasion to persuasion?
Okay. Thank you, counsel.
All right, just a couple of points. I wanted to first address the question, Justice Birdwell, that we discussed earlier and that you asked my opponent about, and that's the inside versus the outside of the boxer shorts. And in looking at it, the presence of semen was located on both sides of where the penis would be of the underwear. Semen was located on what was referred to as the outer fly area and then the inner fly area.
And all that would indicate would be it could have soaked through.
It could have soaked through, or he could have worn them inside out. I mean, there's a lot of possibilities, but it was located there. But the expert did testify that that she did not make a distinction between the inside and the outside. And while I think this is...
She was focused on the fact that it was...
A cutting.
A piece of clothing, and at the point in the clothing, which would be the most likely to obtain evidence from his penis.
Correct.
Okay.
And so, and why I think this is important is because when you're looking at, and going back to Justice Wallach's question about the epithelial cells, because and I did go back and look, and you're right, the source of the DNA of MG could not be determined, whether it was epithelial cells, blood. The blood was not specifically indicated to be hers. And so that increases the likelihood that touch DNA, or that the DNA could have ended up on his pants or his underwear in a different way, because the testimony was he was sleeping on the couch, and again, he had semen on his underwear, which may increase the chances that he could obtain touch DNA. And this is kind of corroborated by the fact that the expert did testify that there were other people's DNA on other items of Ochoa's clothing. So
let me ask you this.
Yes, sir.
We understand this is a stain. Is it a dry stain, or is it still wet? Or do we know?
I don't think we would know, and honestly, I don't know how quickly the lab tested and if they would be able to. I don't think the law enforcement ever tested.
In other words, at some point in time, they had to take the sample.
Correct.
Okay. Presumptively, it would be dry, but if it were wet and it was a new stain, if you will, would that, because of the contemporaneous nature of it, that would be stronger evidence than if it were just something dry that could have been there for some time?
I believe it would, but I don't think the record indicates that. I mean,
I wasn't sure.
Yeah, he was taken to, he was interviewed in those underwear. They weren't taken until he was taken to juvenile detention.
Okay.
Much later. So I don't think there would be any way to determine that.
Okay.
Whether that.
When did the offense allegedly occur?
Like the specific date of the offense?
No, the time of the day.
It would have been in the middle of the night. And again, this is another point I was going to make, is that the state did not call any of the people from the house as witnesses. So all we really know is that they presumably went to bed that night. They woke up the next morning and she was gone. We don't really have anything from the record as to when she was last seen or when, but it was sometime in the night. Everyone wakes up the next morning and realizes she's gone, and that's when law enforcement.
What time did the confession occur?
That would have been the middle of the afternoon that day that they found her that morning.
So it would have been several hours.
Correct, several hours. And then some time after that, before he was taken, and if the court's not aware, the detention center for juveniles is about an hour from Cook County, so he would have had to be transported to the juvenile detention facility. So I don't think there's any way the record would show or be able to know whether that was a dry stain or a wet stain.
Well, there wasn't any observation. Nobody said, oh, what's going on?
No, okay. That was not. Okay. I don't think there was any. They just kind of generally took all of his clothes when he was booked in to collect evidence, and that was the extent of it on the record. Okay. And so because of the nature of the DNA, and I don't agree with Ms. Johnson Leo's assessment that the astronomical chances, it would be astronomical that it's so overwhelming. Just the fact that we're having this discussion and breaking it down and trying to figure out what the evidence shows, the jury would have had to engage in the same exercise. And in doing so, they likely would have deferred to a confession to the exclusion of everything else. And because it would have affected their deliberations, Ochoa was harmed by the error, and we ask that the court reverse and remand. Thank you.
All righty. Thank you. We appreciate the arguments of counsel. The case is submitted, and we will stand adjourned.